Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Nicole Hannah-Jones wants people to think about American history and not just the parts that most of us learned in school. Her new book furthers what she started in the original 1619 Project. Here's ABC's Lindsay Davis.
On a still morning in Virginia, Nicole Hannah-Jones remembers.
You are standing on sacred land.
Here on this shoreline in Fort Monroe, she's paying tribute to the first enslaved Africans who arrived in America in the year 1619.
With our sister, our beloved Nicole Hannah-Jones here, we must tell the truth and have the courage to speak forth.
The date is fundamental to the journalist's most well-known piece of work, the 1619 Project, in which she argues that slavery's legacy shapes everything in our democracy.
You can look at the insurrection on January 6th. You can look at all of the efforts in states to restrict voting. You can look at why are we the most carceral nation in the world.
I don't feel like my job takes courage.
And it's the debate over that year that's made Hannah-Jones one of the most lauded and vilified public figures in America today.
We should all take the 1619 Project as a story about America. This is not Black American history. This is American history.
What was your inspiration for the 1619 Project?
I learned about the year 1619 in a one semester Black Studies elective that I took in high school. There was a power both in understanding that Black people had actually been here almost as long as the English settlers, which no one had ever taught us.
Her new book, The 1619 Project, A New Origin Story, argues slavery isn't just part of the American story, it's central to it.
Would you say that you're reframing the history or rewriting the history?
We're not rewriting it because, one, everything in the 1619 Project is based off of decades of historical scholarship, but we're certainly reframing it.
The daughter of a Black father and a white mother from Waterloo, Iowa, she says she felt the disparities firsthand between her Black and white relatives.
My Black grandmother was born in 1924 in Greenwood, Mississippi, where Black people couldn't vote, where Black people couldn't attend whatever schools they wanted to, where Black people couldn't go to the library. And my white grandfather was born in 1924. And as a white man, he could do all of those things.
The 1619 Project is her brainchild, first published in a special edition of the New York Times Magazine in 2019. It was a sensation. Supporters celebrated its message of inclusivity and diversity. The magazine now selling on eBay for $500. And Hannah-Jones even won the highly esteemed Pulitzer Prize. But as her star rocketed, controversy followed closely behind. Her social media became a magnet for outrage and ire. Hannah-Jones fired back.
And when people try to discredit my work, I felt like I had to be out there doing battle. I regret that, absolutely.
And then in 2020 came her most high-profile detractor of all, the President of the United States.
The left has warped, distorted, and defiled the American story. There is no better example than the New York Times totally discredited 1619 Project.
Trump even signed an executive order creating a 1776 commission with the goal of teaching patriotic education.
Frankly, that commission was just doubling up on the education that most of our kids receive, which is a fairly whitewashed education that is not really telling us an accurate depiction of our country.
The 1619 Project became linked with the debate over critical race theory, or CRT, a decades-old academic theory that argues racism has been built into the institutions of our nation and looks at racism through a systemic lens.
People who are saying critical race theory are really saying the teaching of racism and the history of racism. The 1619 Project has gotten lumped in with that because it centers Black Americans and it centers slavery. The 1619 Project is a work of journalism. It's not critical race theory.
But she says she does support teaching critical race theory in schools.
What do you say to parents who say that critical race theory is just a way to make white children feel guilty about the sins of the past?
I don't know any educators that are telling white children that they are responsible for the sins of their ancestors. But we should collectively feel shame for slavery. It's not shame because that child is white. It's shame because that is a shameful part of our history.
But others took aim at her sourcing. Sean Wilentz is a Pulitzer Prize finalist and professor of history at Princeton University. He and a group of fellow historians wrote a letter to the New York Times Magazine saying there were factual errors and misleading material in the original project.
The most egregious inaccuracy had to do with the American Revolution. It was stated that one of the primary reasons for the revolution was the American colonists wanted to protect the institution of slavery, which is simply not true.
She cites the case of James Somerset, who was a slave in Virginia, went to Great Britain, asked for his freedom then, and a judge ruled in his favor. Do you think that that gives any validity, any credibility to the point that she's trying to make?
No, that's been debunked. The idea that the Somerset case did anything to make American slaveholders nervous about the possibility that Britain was going to abolish slavery, that's just absurd.
But Hannah Jones disputes that criticism.
You can say maybe I worded it more strongly than you would as a historian, but you can't say that there's no evidence to back up the claim. We peer reviewed that section with several historians of that era, and there are more than 1,000 endnotes in this book.
Our job as historians is to consider the validity of the evidence. There's always going to be conflict. The point is you have to remain true to the actual historical record. If you're not doing that, then you're doing something very pernicious.
But educators like Chicago High School teacher Rebecca Coven say the 1619 Project is only enriching students' educations.
You guys all read for homework The Idea of America, which is by Nicole Hannah Jones, who is the editor of the 1619 Project. I want my students to think critically about the information they consume and to never accept anything as fact. And the 1619 Project, to me, was filling a gap that exists in the curriculum.
For the past 2 years, she's used excerpts in her history and English classes.
I was finally getting a perspective that I have never learned about.
Her students have even published their own edition of the 1619 Project, examining issues plaguing their community in Rogers Park, Chicago.
I specifically did an article on health inequities because we have a clinic in our school and showing how that can help communities and help students get the proper care that they need.
The section I worked on was redlining, and that really helped me understand how racism and racial discrimination is a real thing, and it happens in the U.S. even today.
But Ms. Coven does admit there were challenges in the beginning.
It's personal for a lot of students. There were times when people had to, like, walked out the room, getting in arguments with each other. But it's the conversations that we had afterwards to repair harm, to process what had happened, that I think was a huge learning point for a lot of us.
The students have even taken what they've learned to enact change.
They have organized to remove police from our school. They have started the Black Lives Matter Week of Action. They have seen through the 1619 Project, I too can use my voice to not just identify injustices, but take action and rally others around that action as well.
Last year, millions took action, protests erupting around the world following the death of George Floyd, demanding justice and equality.
Do you feel that we are in a time of racial reckoning, or is this, as you describe in the book, the myth of racial progress?
Definitely, this is the myth of racial progress. We were at the cusp of reckoning, but it was very fleeting. What we are most comfortable with as Americans is saying, yes, it was bad back then, but it's not like that anymore. And yes, we have inequality now, but one day in the future, it's going to get better. And then that alleviates us of the need to act.
She says one way to help, financial reparations, cash payments from the federal government to descendants of the enslaved.
My argument is, let's face up to the truth, collectively saying, we did a great wrong. What do we do to make it right?
You have an 11-year-old daughter.
Yes.
Do you feel that in her lifetime, she will see justice?
Is it possible that we can get a reparations bill passed in her lifetime? It's possible. But will she know equality? No, I don't think so. Give Black people reparations, and Black people will still suffer from police violence, from discrimination in the housing market. But if Black people did not have this gaping lack of wealth, they would be able to move into safer neighborhoods, to go to college without having the largest student loan debt of all racial groups.
After 402 years of what many argue is inequality, Hannah Jones concedes the justice she seeks may be elusive, but that certainly is not stopping her from pursuing it.
I have long studied the way that Black women in particular who speak up against power, who dare challenge narratives, get treated. And I can just tell you, I'm built for this. It's okay.
Our thanks to Lindsay. Now we want to update you on a story we reported last night. The groundbreaking civil suit against those who organized the 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. 32-year-old Heather Heyer was killed. Several others were injured when a car driven by one of the defendants plowed into a group of counter-protesters. Today, a federal jury awarded the plaintiffs more than $26 million in damages. Alt-right leader Richard Spencer called the verdict flawed and vowed to appeal. And up next, behind the scenes in House of Gucci, we hear from the All-Star cast.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ridley Scott's new film, House of Gucci, is packed with some of Hollywood's biggest stars, telling the tale of one of the world's most famous families who built the iconic brand. ABC's Chris Connolly met the cast.
Gucci. It was a name that sounded so sweet, so seductive.
Based on actual events. Yes, really. Director Ridley Scott's House of Gucci fuses a famous Italian fashion brand and succession-style family business intrigue.
What game are you playing?
Ridley has all the space in the world for that magic. He feeds it. It's like oxygen into fire.
We used a lot of opera during the film because I felt the film's story actually was an opera. Because when people hate each other, there's always a reason why they loved each other.
Those opera-sized emotions via an A-list cast making all the passions and the plotting feel even larger than life.
I knew of the Gucci's. It was really top-notch script. And I'm here in L.A. in the pandemic for a year and a half.
Were you losing your mind a little bit, kind of wanting to get out
there? No, that went on a long time ago.
In her first film role since A Star is Born, put a Best Song Oscar on her mantelpiece.
Thank you so much.
Lady Gaga says she's fully committed on many levels.
Father, son, and House of Gucci.
The story was something that spoke to me because of my Italian heritage. I partook in a romance with Patrizia that I could not get out of.
As Al Pacino's Aldo Gucci runs the business, Gaga's Patrizia Reggiani woos, weds, and then connives with Adam Driver's shy-era Maurizio Gucci.
She found Maurizio Gucci not looking to marry Rich, but she found him and she fell in love with him. It was, you know, 50% love and then 50% what it could be. She led with her strength, and she led with her love, and she led with her power.
You're drawn into a world you didn't expect to be in from love.
Yeah, that's what is attractive about him, is that he follows his heart, and then eventually he kind of
becomes his own person, at least in his mind, and that's kind of his downfall.
Do you want to be left in the dust?
Bolstered by Patrizia's ambitions, Adam Driver's Maurizio begins to find his footing in the fashion world, and his transformation is a visible one.
There's all big themes about being seduced by power, also knowing what you shouldn't be doing and doing it anyway.
No such respect is forthcoming for Jared Leto's hapless Paolo Gucci.
Paolo, you are Gucci, you need to dress the part.
It's chic.
Hey, look, the film is very fun. It's exciting. It's obviously about a very serious and dysfunctional family. But at the same time, the characters have a lot of life, and a lot of joy, a lot of laughter.
Before we were going to start to film, and someone came up to me and looked me straight in the eye and said, Papa, Papa. And I thought, uh-oh, there's a crazy person on the set. And I thought, you know, it's Italy. All of a sudden I heard, help, it's Jared. And it was Jared standing in front of me. I bowed to him. I said, this is a genius. This is an inspiration.
No stranger to portraying mercurial men atop powerful families, Pacino has his Aldo Gucci beam when he sees the dynamic Patrizia. His reaction is in part a tribute, Pacino says, to the actress who plays her.
I'm glad you noticed that. Yes, I did. I just connected with her. I understood somehow her life, her energy.
Why is she so compelling on screen,
well,
our young lady?
Because
here?
She is, I have to say it, she's a great actress, and that's all there is to it.
How about for you, Salma? You have a fascinating role in all this.
Oh, I love her relationship with Patrizia. I think that Pina, I actually believe that she is psychic and she can see things, believe me or not. And I think that when she meets Patrizia, she's actually able to see that this woman has a great destiny.
I see an abuse of trust, an attempt to deceive you in your own house. You understand? Yes, Pina.
Salma Hayek's psychic leads a spurned and heartbroken Patrizia to the movie's violent climax, ending this fashion funhouse on a mournful note.
Maybe at the beginning, you know, Pina, Napolitan people have a little bit of a reputation, but I think maybe she says, okay, this one's gonna come into money, this is gonna serve me. But she ends up kind of really caring for her.
There's more to House of Gucci than just sadness.
Hello. I remember we did a scene together, and at one point you started singing Old Man River at the end, and it didn't make it in the cut, but I remember. You remember that scene? Often?
I don't remember singing Old Man River.
You did. You sang the Old Man River.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, and then Patrizia didn't know that song, and after you said, do you know the song? I said, I know the song, but she doesn't know the song.
I didn't know you could bust out Little Old Man River every now and then.
It comes. What can I tell you?
I'm just saying, if you do another, you know. He's,
we're making an album together.
I can't wait.
Our thanks to Chris. Up next, look who's blasting off into space. He's one of ABC's own. And finally tonight, Amazon's Blue Origins has announced the crew for their next space launch. And my Good Morning America colleague Michael Strahan was offered a seat. Now he's in training, suiting up.
Fits like a glove.
Getting ready for the ride of a lifetime.
We need to get good at going to space so that we can save the Earth. It's true that we've got tons of problems here on Earth, and we need to work on those in the here and now, too.
Blasting off in just 16 days. That's Nightline for this evening. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.